Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday, talking some USC Trojan football with Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist for us here at USCFootball.com. We're going to answer your questions about USC summer workouts. We're 8 days away from Pac-12 Media Day, so we'll talk maybe a little about that, but answer your questions about the team. Dan and I were both down at USC's player-run practice this morning, so I think we'll talk about that first a little bit ourselves. Any questions or comments, we do love to hear from you. Podcast at USCFootball.com is our email address, or if you'd like to call or text, the number 424-254-9141. You can call us, leave a voicemail, you can text us. We'd love to hear from you. And if hope you got the chance to hear our Trojan Blast premium recruiting podcast, about 2 hours of Gerard Martinez and myself talking USC Trojan football recruiting. That's for VIP members of USCFootball.com only. So if you want to do that, check it out. Perfect time to come sign up. We got lots of coverage of the team from the summer, and we're heading into the fall camp, of course, and the 2018 season. So this is the time to ramp up. If you're not a member of USCFootball.com, VIP member, you should jump in there now. $10 a month. Well worth it. The peristyle is great. And you get lots of great commentary from Chris and Shotgun and Keely and Gerard, myself, and of course, our guest, Dan Weber. What's up, Dan? How you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Kind of like the USC defense today. He had a good day. Kind of upbeat. I do like the fact that they do look like they're going to show up every day. And as I talked to them today on every play, not just on occasion or when they know they really have to show up, like in the red zone or short yardage or whatever, but they certainly seem to understand that. So that was a lot of what we talked to them about today after what was admittedly a good day for the defense.
It certainly was, and we're going to talk about that. Before we do, I just wanted to thank our sponsor, Lisa Beds. It's funny, we're down at the summer workout this morning, and our new intern, Chloe, was down there. She's a graduate student at USC, was on the rowing team, had some problem with her bed, and she goes, "Ryan, I bought a Lisa bed. I was very excited for her." So she loves it. Yeah, so it's pretty cool. It's a quality night's sleep, helps you recover from the distractions faster, prevents burnout, helps you make better decisions, improve your memory. Overall, you'll make fewer mistakes. It's not marketing, it's science. So to design a better mattress, Lisa leveraged 30-plus years of experience and hundreds of hours of testing to develop the perfect mattress for all body shapes and sleeping styles. And you can tell it works. I like it. I'm 6'3". I think Chloe's like 5'5 or something. It works for her. So, yeah, it's great that she went in there and loved it. It's they want to leave the world a better place than what they found it. So they do that with the mattress donations. They've donated over 26,000 mattresses and counting. They're also teaming up with the Arbor Day Foundation. They'll plant a tree for every mattress they sell. They're committed to planting 1 million trees by 2025, so that's pretty cool. And you get savings, Dan. If you want to buy the Lisa mattress, just as what Chloe did, go to lisa.com, LEESA.com/USC, and you'll get $160 off the Lisa mattress. So I made sure, I'm like, "Chloe, you got the discount right." She goes, yeah. So Chloe did it, our intern. Hopefully you guys will do it as well. Go check out lisa.com/USC.
So I'm interested about Chloe as a rower. Was she on the lightweight crew, or was she a coxswain?
She's a coxswain, or coxswain.
If she looks like, she would be, she'd be a good one. Okay, very impressed.
Yeah, she goes out there, she ends up working out. As an athlete, she goes, works out. She'll see the players down there. She works out in the McKay Center and stuff. And then she's doing like 9 to 12 class every day for this graduate study like at Annenberg. So it's kind of crazy. So she was down there this morning until she had to run off to class. But she's been great helping us out with stuff on USCFootball.com. And I told her I'd mention her on the podcast today because I was like, oh, that's awesome that you bought the Lisa bed. So very cool. But so the workout is what we were talking about down there at USC. A lot of football's hitting the ground, I guess you could say, Dan. I got to do instant analysis, my first one I've done in a long time. So I got to do that with Dan. Keeley's on vacation this week, but just it didn't seem to be the sharpest practice, I guess you could say, for the offense.
No, I think, you know, they're finishing up the, you know, strength and conditioning part of the summer. So I think, and I think they have a pretty good grasp of the playbooks. I think they're real impressed with themselves. They're doing tests all the time on defense, for example, and they think that's really helped them. So I think they're pretty up to speed. And on a day like today, they ended up with just the one quarterback, Matt Fink. So, you know, I think, again, it's not so much the way it used to be where it was, we basically evaluate them as summer throwing sessions. And that really, you really needed to be able to throw the ball pretty well every time you went out there, and that's what it was all about. This is different. They're trying to, you know, really be able to hit the ground running in August and trying to, you know, really master the playbooks. And I think they've done mostly that. The execution on offense maybe hasn't been perfect, but they certainly are missing a lot of guys. You know, tight ends are way down. You know, they're going with like 8 offensive linemen. We didn't see all the running backs today. So it's not a surprise that maybe the offensive execution isn't, you know, perfect. And that's not the point of the PRPs. But the defense is really trying to be perfect, it looks like. They're trying to communicate. I know some of the people on the P were asking, you know, what was the pressure that the quarterback's under? And they're, no, there's pressure. They're coming hard, and they're in his face. You know, they're obviously no pads. Nobody's tackling anybody. Nobody's hitting anybody. But he's getting people running at him on every play. I mean, they were really, really coming hard today in terms of the blitz and all that kind of stuff. So the quarterbacks, you know, and today you tend to say quarterbacks, and Jack Sears was there for a little bit, but they were under pressure. And so they've got to try to get rid of it, you know, fairly quickly. And there weren't many openings. And if the ball was a little late, you had a defender playing the football. So I like the looks of that. So, I mean, it's like, I know it used to be the days, and we've had 3 straight quarterbacks as coaches. So you tend to look at, as head coaches, you tend to look at the game through their eyes. And you knew when it was Lane or Steve, they wanted the offense to do well. I mean, it was important to them. And on some days when the defense really dominated, they weren't happy at all. And yet you can look at it, and I think you got to come away from a day like today and just say, man, that's good for the defense to be playing like that and to be all upbeat and excited and all fired up. And I just think you have to decide, you know, how you're going to look at things. And I think, you know, with this team, I think looking at it from defense first is a good way to look at it.
Dan, I talked to Ajani Harris during the last summer workout, not this morning, but the last one. I still haven't put the story up yet, but I will. And if you remember, and so basically what's going on, Dan, you know, talked about this. We're not seeing, like the last couple, we haven't even seen them do throwing lines. It's really just, you know, kind of goof around a little bit and then get right into 7-on-7 and 11-on-11. It's like preparing for practice. There's no competitive periods. There's no one-on-ones. There's not the kind of stuff that we used to see a lot of. And if you remember when Ajani Harris came in, who Crenshaw High School, 3-star kid, played quarterback and cornerback and, you know, did special team stuff. He hadn't played wide receiver since he was in 7th grade. Came out there in the summer and started playing wide receiver against, I forget who the DBs were, but was doing great. He was doing this amazing job and really kind of made a name for himself in those one-on-ones in the summer. And I think that really set him up to, you know, have a career. He switched around a little bit, but played a lot, you know, over his years at USC. And I asked him, and, you know, if he came in today, he wouldn't have got those opportunities because he wasn't able to do those kind of things in the summer. He would have been like the third string cornerback or something and just would have been going through plays. And you really wouldn't, I mean, maybe he could go out there and make a play, but I don't think he would have had that same opportunity because these workouts are so different now than they were just a few years ago. Do you think that's fair, or do you see the same thing?
No, that's a good point. The point is, and I think, you know, if you structure them and you make them like a practice, you know, the players are running them, obviously, and the coaches are nowhere around, but obviously everybody agrees that this is kind of how they want to go. And that may give you a, you know, running start into August and, you know, a lot more. You don't have to go through the playbook as much in that, but you do maybe lose the opportunity to have a kid like a Jenny show, you know, what he can do, because it's more freewheeling and more guys just trying to show you what they can do, more one-on-ones. And I know the, you know, when you get an injury like in one-on-ones, then everybody says, should we be doing that? Because they go too hard and they really, there's no good answer, I don't think, because if you turn them loose and say, we're going to go one-on-one all out, you're going to see some guys really go hard on both sides of the ball. And so you get a chance to see, oh man, look at that. And then, but you also get a chance that guy, you know, tears a knee up, because there's nobody to, you know, say, oh, take it easy, slow it down, calm, you know, all of that kind of thing. So I don't know which is the absolutely best way to go, but with a much more structured, you know, sort of depth chart almost, or when you had it freewheeling and guys just jumped in there, and it was, again, it was the more throwing sessions, and everybody did their thing. You didn't see 11 on 11 almost at all. You didn't see the defense really doing more than just really the secondary, you know, working on coverage and a lot of individual stuff. But they're much more team-oriented now, and you might not be able to make people, you know, notice you right away. Although, with this team, you're hearing a lot of upperclassmen talking about a lot of freshmen, a lot of names that they're mentioning and telling you, you know, this kid, or they don't always know their names. They'll say, Aka Cedric Ware the other day said, that G kid, he said, I don't know all their names yet, but he meant Elijah Griffin. But, you know, they're getting noticed, but in a different way. But I don't know. I don't know that there's a good answer as to the more freewheeling individualistic stuff or the team-oriented stuff. I think that's a really good question. I wish I had a good answer.
Let's jump into some of the questions from what we were seeing out there. Nick from Cyprus, a.k.a. Big Nick 21, USC from the P. Questions in regards to the incoming freshman who arrived in the summer. Who is killing it in the PRPs?
Killing it.
Anyone killing it? I mean, you could say
Amon Ross St. Brown.
Yeah.
I think you got to say he's killing it. I would say we haven't seen him as much. JT Daniels almost doesn't do anything wrong. I mean, he does. He gets rid of the ball quickly. He's super accurate. He looks confident. Those are the first two names. Most of the upperclassmen mentioned, they almost all mention Elijah Griffin. A lot of them mention Talanoa Hufanga. Let's see, Porter mentioned Abdul Malik McLean. And there's always a difference between, well, are you talking about the freshmen that came in the spring and the freshmen that are just here in the summer? If you talk about the spring guys, they'll always say Kanai Mauga. There's a lot of, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, the young guys that are killing it. As far as, I thought Aka Cedric Ware looks awfully good. I just think he looked good. Jordan Iosefa, man, he's 237 pounds. He doesn't look like the same kid in some ways. He just looks really legit with what you're seeing with him. I think Jenny Harris has had a really, really good summer. Marvell Towles, he had a good summer. A lot of the defensive backs, I mean, they're so interchangeable, so many of them. Iman Marshall is continuing the leap that we saw him take in the spring. I just thought he, you know, became such a much more of a technique-oriented guy and a guy that didn't play physical first and wasn't overly aggressive and just used his, you know, his talent and his ability to run with people and locate the ball and play with his eyes and anticipation and his experience and not, you know, worry about somebody if they, you know, get a half a step on you or whatever and you got to grab them and all that. So there are a lot of guys that, you know, that you notice. I mean, you notice the 3 second-year defensive linemen, Jay Tefele and Brandon Peely and Marlon Tui-Pulutu. He's telling us today that he's going to be 100% for the start of August practice. And that's a pretty impressive threesome. That's he's 310 pounds, looks really good. He's still limited a little bit on his Olympic weight lifts and that, but other than that, he looks like he's going to be able to contribute, and all those guys do. So it's hard to, you know, I think Tyler Vaughns is just a natural. He has a smooth ability to get into his routes, and he loses people. It's just kind of an easy acceleration that he has, and he just looks really, really confident this year. And then opposite him, Michael Pittman is just a big brawler. You know, he's just going to fight, you know, for the ball. He's also, you know, it looks like he's playing with confidence. So I think they got a lot of people you can look at and say, okay, I like the looks of a number of these guys. Again, as Porter Gustin was saying the other day, it's PRPs, you know. We'll see what happens when we put the pads on. We'll see what happens when they get to September. But, you know, let's face it, they've got so many athletes. When you look at the numbers recruiting-wise, and you compare the USC numbers to the rest of the Pac-12, I mean, you almost can't. I mean, USC's numbers compare basically to all the rest of the Pac-12 put together. So there's when you say there's a lot of athletes on the field at USC, there are a lot of athletes on the field at USC. I mean, there really are. So you ought to be able to make something out of that.
Yeah, you should. There's enough athletes in your – you know, if you're in your spice rack, you could make something that tastes really good. You know, there's enough, you have enough variety there that you should be able to come up with something. Let's see, we got John in Brea. He says, thank you and the USCfootball.com team for helping us get through the summer and the offseason. Once again, Dan was spot on with his call about USC's offensive line and the need for that unit to be one of the nation's best if USC is to compete for national titles again. Question. Do you think the resurgence of Stanford under Jim Harbaugh and now David Shaw is a big factor in USC not getting back to that elite level on the offensive line? It seems to me over the past 10 years, Stanford is getting a lot of the five-star offensive linemen that normally would have gone to USC. Also coinciding with Stanford's renaissance was a change in USC's offense under Kiffin, Sark, and now Clay Helton. Is the current offensive philosophy, not to mention quote unquote no pads November, conducive to having a big, physical, tough, athletic offensive line? Thanks for all you do. Only 50 days till the first game. Fight on, John in Brea.
Yeah, John, I think that's an interesting thought of maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, there was kind of that, USC not having a really well-defined personality, and Stanford was kind of, you know, the intersection when Harbaugh is leaving and Shaw is coming in, and they did get some, you know, some players, you know, some offensive linemen at the time. I don't know that that's necessarily the case now. I think the case with USC is it's not Stanford. It's USC. I mean, last year, to be honest, USC blocked the heck out of Stanford. I mean, USC was just totally dominant in game one and dominant enough in game two that shouldn't have been, you know, all that close. But But I don't think, I think, for a while you can give Stanford some credit. I don't think that's the case now. USC ought to be more dominant than they are. They've recruited what looked like some, fairly dominant defensive players. But, you got to – I think the offensive linemen just have to become more dominant. I know Phil Steele says they're the number eight offensive line in the country, and a lot of that is because of the four starters back and either Austin Jackson or Clayton Johnson or whatever. But I think the thing we're not seeing is an offensive line that has the ability to go into Notre Dame when they're all fired up and really trying to take the ball away and dominate early, or an offensive line that has the ability to, to go to the Cotton Bowl against a really outstanding Ohio State front, or an offensive line that had some guys hurt and went to Washington State and couldn't drive the ball against, a team with playing 250-pound, defensive tackles. That shouldn't be the case. USC has to be more physical, has to be more focused. I think being the, making the decision to go run first will allow them to be more aggressive every day in practice. It'll allow the offensive linemen to focus more on, that kind of, physical football. And it'll help, I think, if you force teams to defend the run. Even last year, USC couldn't depend on the run. As good as Ronald Jones was and as much of a threat as he was to break one, you weren't really sure in third and short that they were going to be able to pound the ball in there. And some of that was scheme. Some of that was, toughness and physicality and the way they practiced it. And I think they've got to have the mindset that we are going to whip you on the offensive line, whoever you are. And let's face it, in the Pac-12, you ought to be able to do that. I mean, you really ought to. And maybe that's the problem. You can do that in the Pac-12. Even if you don't focus on it and you force it to happen because you're USC. But you've got to be able to make that step if you want to be USC and take that step up, to nationally being competitive. You have to be able to go against the Ohio States and the Notre Dames away from home. And that we haven't seen. I mean, we didn't see it last year a lot of times, like against Texas. I mean, Texas certainly won the physical battle last year. Heck, Western Michigan almost won, the physical battle last year. Utah did. UCLA did. That can't be allowed to stand. USC's got to be going into these games and saying, we're going to be able to dominate at the line of scrimmage on offense. And, I think there were ways, it got there in a number of ways. The scholarship sanctions, I think, hurt. The way they practice as a result of the scholarship sanctions, having three straight offensive coordinator quarterbacks in college who didn't hit while they were in college themselves as head coaches, I think that hurt. A little indecisiveness as to what exactly do you want the offense to be. I mean, last year, do we still know what exactly did they want to do on offense? It looked like, it was one of those, well, let's make, hope Sam makes a play. That wasn't good enough. I think they've got to, develop a personality and really be able to, stick to it and make it happen. And I didn't see the sense that USC was going to go into games and just flat out take them over and make the game go their way, other than the first Stanford game, which, I mean, they did things and you look at the film and they blocked people and they got downfield and the timing, and then that all went away. It's hard to believe, where it went, but it absolutely went away and went away quickly. And then it was more like, come on, Sam, make a play. And that's just too hard to do, as Sam saw. I mean, it happened once against Penn State in one of those games that'll never happen again. But I did even said, today that I think they couldn't get that game out of their heads. That game, as much as they said they wanted to forget the Penn State game and move on, they could not. No one could. And they were always hoping to, recreate that, and, people wouldn't let them. And, you know, Sam, you know, suffered from that, all the turnovers and the way people took, you know, they came at him. That was a tough year last year, I think. Despite Sam, despite Ronald Jones, despite Deontay Burnett, that was a tough year on offense, I think, in a lot of ways. When they really needed to be able to play offense at Washington State, at Notre Dame, and against Ohio State, they could not. And that's not a good year. And so they, I think the focus this year will be better. I think the offensive scheme will be better. We'll see. I think they'll practice harder. I think they have to. Players know it. Coaches have to know it. I mean, we can talk to them about it. They'll always tell us, yeah, but you really have to believe it and you really have to do it. I think they will, but I wish they didn't have to be guessing right now about that.
Yeah. Before we jump into the rest of the questions, wanted to thank Trader Joe's. We've been working with them for over a year, planning on, once we get the fall camp schedule, planning on doing another sort of tailgate event at one of, or before one of the USC practices. We'll send you more details when that happens, but you can go to TraderJoe's.com. But if you have one in your neighborhood, I have one in Hermosa Beach where I'm from. Just picked up a 12 pack of specialty beers that I like to have. We always buy bottles of wine, pick up some cheese, crackers, different snacks. My wife and I had dinner last night, and it was like some different Indian food that we had bought from Trader Joe's. So some good stuff. Dan and I both love going. Bring your USC Trader Joe's bag, and we're going to get a whole bunch more of those. So hopefully you can come to our event in August. We're going to give away hundreds more of those Trader Joe's bags that are USC branded. So great stuff from Trader Joe's. And Dan, I know you love them too.
You might have to do a little work to get me up to speed on the Indian food, though. I'd have to try that. An acquired taste, as they say. I don't know. I don't know much about it.
You know, big Indian guy. Yeah. So a lot
Trader Joe's would be a place to explore stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I like Indian food, but there'll be like bags of lentils, or there'll be some different vegetables and stuff, and then you can cook some chicken and some rice and just kind of put it together. So it's similar to what you would get like in an Indian restaurant. I love the garlic naan. You can get that kind of stuff too. So I always buy some, you know, I don't tell my wife, but I buy a little package of cookies and I'll bring those into my office. But yeah.
I can go with you on that. Yeah. I can go with you on those cookies.
All right. Thanks to Trader Joe's. And wanted to, let's move on. We got SC Made wrote in. He said, your team is the best out there and I appreciate all the work you do. Well, thank you very much. He said, on the last podcast, Dan mentioned not wanting to show schemes in the UNLV game before facing Stanford and Texas. I'm not sure if I misunderstood Dan, but aren't we all in agreement of not wanting to be cute and sneaky anymore? If you know you have the best team out there and the team that can execute, who cares if the opposing team gets one game worth of film with this new team/lineup? In my opinion, there is no reason to hide your rotations and scheme. Let the team do what they do and learn to master it. If Clancy's scheme is as good as Clay thinks it is, and if the players are executing to the level we know they can, Stanford and Texas cannot stop them. I think the same should be with our offense. Focus on the trenches, play physical, and run the rock to set up play action. I hope nothing more than for Clay to take the next step this year and inserting himself as a top-tier coach. Best from SC Made.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think the realistic person says they probably won't show, you know, what they're thinking about doing for Stanford and Texas. But, you know, you can't hold anything back at Stanford. So Texas is obviously going to see what they see. And everybody, you don't prepare the same way. I mean, this is one of my points I would like to make for them is I wish they would focus more on USC being USC. And sure, you're going to prepare differently for all three of those games. But don't make the emphasis on preparing for the other team. Make the emphasis preparing your team to play your football and dare them to stop your team doing what you do well. Spend more time, you know, not reacting to what you see from them on film, but making them react to you, making them, you know, be good enough to stop you doing what you do best. And, that's my tendency. It is one of the issues, I think, sometimes when the head coach or the three straight head coaches are all play callers, are all play designers, are all, you know, people who that's how they look at football through designing. I mean, we know the story of Lane and Steve would, you know, on cocktail napkins, probably not a good sign, were drawing plays when they were assistants. And that's how they saw, you know, the game of football. I'm not sure that's when you're at USC. I don't know that you need to be trying to fool people, trying to, you know, come up with different schemes every week that, you know, show how smart the head coach is or anything like that. I think you need to do what, you know, you need to figure out what do these guys do best? How do we do it? How do we get there every week? And you just turn them loose and say, see if you guys can stop them because we think we're better than you are and we do what we do better than you do. And yeah, that's my general approach. And I would agree with SC Made.
Okay. Thanks for that one, SC Made, and for the kind words. Tarek Simple, in very Tarek fashion. How can Clay Helton improve on the road this year?
I think one of the ways you improve on the road is, and I know, you know, people get, oh, you're always harking back to this and that. It's all about the ball, and you don't give the ball away. I mean, how different would all three of the losses have been had USC not turned the ball over, or had they taken it away? And I think they've really got to focus on that. That's just got to be more important than it's been. I think on the road, you just can't be giving up the ball like they did early. You know, against Ohio State and certainly Notre Dame, you cannot do that. You gotta, you know, make them work really hard. And your defense, I think if you're more of a defense first team, you take them, you don't let them in the game. You don't let their crowd get all fired up. You frustrate them a little bit. I mean, I always think the perfect example of USC football was that, you know, year when Matt Leinart came in to replace Carson Palmer. And you lost your Heisman Trophy winning, you know, quarterback. You lost your, you know, super safety, Troy Polamalu. You went to Auburn, who some people thought could win the national championship. And you don't let Auburn play. You just, Auburn had a whole ton of guys that went to play in the NFL, quarterbacks and running backs and linebackers and all that. They didn't let them, just USC said, no, we're not letting you play. And, you know, that was the game when the Auburn, you know, fans were saluting their recently deceased play-by-play guy, radio guy, and half the stadium was asked to, you know, his standard call was, touchdown, Auburn! And they would have half the, you know, 40-some thousand, they practiced it before their kickoff. You know, one side of the stadium would say, touchdown, and the other side would, Auburn, touchdown, you know. And so they tell them, this is what we're going to do. When we score against USC, only problem, USC didn't let them score. They said, nope, you're not scoring. They didn't get it. You know, they didn't get one chance to do that all day to do the famous touchdown Auburn. And that's how you win on the road. You take the crowd out. And that game, USC literally took the crowd out. And this defense is starting to think like that. You're getting a sense that they're realizing if we can take the ball away from people, if we can make it really hard. I mean, and one of the reasons they stay later is they work on the pass rush. And when you see what they're doing, you know, even with no pads, they're busting their tails, you know, getting into the backfield. And they're going full speed. And I like the looks of that. So to me, that's how you improve on the road. You don't turn the ball over, you take it away, and you really, really do not let them play on offense. You just, you know, frustrate them. You keep them in their, you know, their end of the, you know, I think Auburn crossed the 50 once in that game. And that, you know, because that was a game USC wasn't sure what Matt Leinart was going to do. They maybe let him have half the playbook. First play of the game that Auburn threw the ball, Darnell Bing intercepts it, You know, they're deep in, you know, Auburn territory, short field. You do that, and all of a sudden that crowd that had been there for an hour and a half, you know, with the stadium full and yelling and screaming, got really quiet. It was like, uh-oh, this is not going to be easy. And I think there's some things about football that just, you know, stand the test of time. And that would be one of them. And I don't know that this program in recent years has been a team that focused on, we're going to take away your ability to run your offense. We're just going to shut you down. We're going to not make mistakes. We're going to, you know, we're going to be aggressive enough. We're not going to worry about guys not carrying out their assignments so that we can be aggressive every time. I mean, that's one of the things that I think hurt Clancy in terms of being as aggressive as he wanted to be, because I'm not sure he trusted everybody to do the right thing. And if you're all, you know, flying around out there and one guy doesn't do what he's doing, you know, here you got 10 guys that have made great plays and they waltzed to a touchdown because the 11th guy went the wrong way. And I think they, you know, they're past that, I think, now. But that's how I would approach it on road games, and obviously how big are the first two road games this year. So I think they've got to figure that out. They've got to, you know, be able to go on the road, and they're going to have to go to, for the two games in the South, you know, they've got a road game at Arizona in the end of September. That's really going to be important with Khalil Tate and the new coach. And I don't, you know, I'm sure Arizona is going to be all fired up to see what they can do. And then USC 3 weeks later goes to Utah. So, you know, the other team that thinks it has a chance in the South. So, yeah. Solving the road portion of the schedule is going to be really, really important. I mean, that's four of the first, whatever, six or seven games that really matter, and they're on the road.
I picked 24/7 Sports will do some video shoots with me, and they'll just ask me like a question, and you know, I give like a minute and a half answer, but that was my pick for, they wanted to know what a trap game was this year, and I picked the Arizona game. Would you agree with that? Or
absolutely, yeah, because there's so much focus on Stanford and Texas, and you got the five, you know, the Friday night Washington State game. It's at home this year, even though USC coming off of two straight weeks on the road to a short week of preparation, which is ridiculous. And when you talk to the USC coaches now, they say, and maybe they overthought it, but they said, you've got to start managing your personnel in the week or two before, knowing you're going to have a short week. Any week, whatever week that is, you know that they're going to be, you know, players that maybe won't quite be ready to go, which was certainly the case last year. But so now you've gotten through those games, and here's another trip to Arizona the end of September, and God knows how hot it's going to be. I don't know. I mean, you know, at least we know the Texas game is whatever, 5:30 kickoff or something like that. But it's 6:30 Texas time. Not sure. It's a prime time game at least. But who knows about the Arizona game in, you know, September in Tucson. You're going to have to be ready. I mean, the last time was the last time they got a day game in Tucson, and that was the game where Keeley's shoes melted, if you remember that. Remember her rubber, she had the rubber sole shoes, and they melted on the turf. So I think you got to be ready for that trip to Tucson.
Yeah. Let's go to Big Nick again. He said, have you seen any improvement in the special teams unit since last year's football season? Which we really haven't had a chance, right? Because it would just be spring football, and there's really nothing in the summer. But what do you think about
I was too flip. Some of the times before practice, you will see Jenny Harris live catching punts, and that's impressive. Because you know they're not doing anything that has anything to do with special teams in the summer. Just watching Amon-Ra's hands and his decisiveness and his toughness and all that makes you think that they're going to have more answers on special teams. Watching Velus Jones, bigger, stronger, quicker, and doesn't look like he is looking for a place to fall down or doesn't have kind of the balance. There was sort of a top heaviness balance issue that seemed to, on first contact, put him on the ground. I'm not seeing that anymore. I'm seeing a guy that is trying to, you know, just run through contact big time. And he got a bigger, stronger, more athletic looking frame, in order to do that. He's getting a chance to run it in the offense as well. So I think just by natural, development and additional personnel, I think they're going to get better. I think in terms of, if you consider all the special teams, you consider the coverage teams, there are so many big athletic safeties, secondary guys, and linebackers. You really should be able to, fill your coverage teams, both punt and kickoff coverage teams, with a ton of guys that ought to be able to cover. I mean, really, they're just – Just a lot of people that you're going to be able to pick from on the coverage team. So we haven't seen it yet, but you would be able to, I think, just assume that there's going to be a jump up. And the fact that John Baxter will not have to coach the tight ends this year and can concentrate on special teams, we hope that's a good thing. We don't want it, where it dominates practice. But there's a lot of opportunity, I think, to, improve on special teams. They better improve on special teams. That was not a good effort for a team with as many athletes as USC has. Last year was not a good effort by the special teams.
Certainly not. let's go. I was on that. I've been harping on that for a while. Boyd in San Ramon, any ideas when training camp will start and if they will be open to the public, or do you know when that info will be released? We are making travel plans and thinking of bringing my 5-year-old son to a practice. Also, I think I've seen kids line up and high five the players as they exit the McKay Center. Is that right? From Boyd.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're good. That's what we understand. What we don't know, August 3rd, I guess, is the first day. What we don't know are times. But we assume that until they get into game week, that there will be, like every year, that fans will be able to go to practice. They also limited practice viewing when they were at the Coliseum, and we're not sure how that's going to work. Will it be limited just because they're letting the grass set in? I mean, it's the turf is down. And I know they're talking about they'd like 6 weeks. And the Rams, I think, are in there like August 15th and the 22nd or something like that. The middle and like the third and fourth weeks of preseason for the NFL. So will USC go in there and have some practices that maybe fans can't watch or have a scrimmage or two? I would guess they will. But we haven't gotten the absolute, final practice schedule. But I would think you'll be able to come. I just don't want to necessarily tell you when, what time or what days those practices are going to be.
Yeah. My guess, the first couple of weeks will be open, but we just don't know yet. And when's the last they kind of wait to tell us, right? Like they for spring ball, it was like the week before, not even the week before. I think it was like a few days.
Yeah,
I think it's the
the times that I don't know if they're going to have anybody in class at the very end of the summer. I don't know if that's becomes a factor. I don't know for sure what are all the determining factors in terms of why they don't necessarily, let us know in advance, or maybe they don't want the players completely to know what the times of practices are, or what. I mean, I think there's always the case of, if you tell the players early enough when their days off are going to be, they're maybe planning to take advantage of, okay, that's our day off, or that's our day off. And so there's a tendency not to want to put that out there too early so that they can kind of make sure that, you know, players don't say, oh, okay, I can go here or I can do this or a group of them, you know, get together. I think they'd rather not have that information out too early for players to be able to kind of look at it and see what time it, I mean, you know, it's a big difference too. If you're going to practice at 9 a.m. or, you know, 7:30 in the evening, and you just, you know you're going to practice, but you don't say exactly when, it's hard to probably plan a, you know, a trip to the beach or, you know, go fishing or whatever. You kind of have to, you know, hold back. So, I would think we won't know way early, like other years. I think they're gonna, and there might also be some issues with the new field and the construction at the Coliseum and the Rams and all of that. That might play into it a little bit as well, I think, this year.
All right, we got a couple more. We'll let you go. Joan, formerly of Ketchum, Idaho, who we got to see, she came out to practice last week, I believe it was. What do you think Max Nikias's resignation effect will be on the football program? In your opinion, is it a positive or a negative, and why? Thanks, dudes, and thank you for keeping us so well informed on everything USC football.
Well, interesting question. Max, who has a summer home up there near Ketchum, Sun Valley, where Joan is, and I think there are a lot of USC people up there, up that way. I mean, I think they were getting close to the place where, with Max as the head of the Pac-12 CEO group, a Pac-12 CEO group that's starting to get hit with the reality stick of $20 million a year per team less than the Big Ten. I think that reality is setting in, and it's interesting. It's setting in on the lower-rung teams who really need that cash. And so Max was in charge of that group, and I thought he was positioned well. He was also, at the time of his resignation, he was the head of the College Football Playoff Committee. So it's kind of unfortunate that having, you know, earned his, you know, way into those two really, you know, places where he could have some real influence, that he won't be there. And I think Max could have been a real leader because I think there were only three Pac-12 CEOs who were there when they hired Larry Scott originally. And I think Max would have been one of those who said, you know, who would have the ability to really influence the newer people if he said, look, this isn't working. We've got to maybe think about going a different direction. I think he was well-placed to maybe be that person. I don't know that the new person, when and if USC, you know, gets that new person in the next 6 months, will be in any position. Obviously, won't be the, you know, chair of the College Football Playoff Committee, but also maybe won't have that same ability to, you know, be influential right away in the Pac-12, which really has to make some serious decisions about where they want to go in football, how they want to go there, who they want to listen to. Do they still want to listen to Larry Scott? I mean, my goodness, 12 years right now, the potential of having 12 years of saying, we're going to get this TV thing right the next time, or, you know, we do a whole lot of soccer games that are really, you know, really of interest to the people in the game, you know, whose parents can't come to the game. No, that's not working. And so I thought they had more opportunity to change some of that with Max still in there. I don't know that USC can have the same kind of influence, you know, right now. And that's too bad. I do think Max was a positive. I know that a lot of people don't agree, maybe, but he did really like the football program, care about the, you know, the program. He needed some more help, I think, from the athletic department, to be honest, in this is what we need to do. This is how we need to do it. I think he needed people, you know, I mean, if you were Max Zacchaeus and the people advising you said, yeah, let's hire that, you know, Steve Sarkisian, he's got a really good reputation at, you know, Washington. If you were Max, after that recommendation, you would probably say, you know, I'm not going to probably buy the next recommendation these guys, you know, send my way. And that was a problem. I think, you know, I'd like to see more, you know, leadership from, you know, the USC athletic department, to be honest, and especially with the new president coming in. And I think we're still waiting to see if that happens. And I'm not sure, you know, we've seen the signs of that. I don't know what you think, Ryan, but I don't know if I've seen that.
No, you have not. I mean, just leadership decisions, man, I can't even spit that out. Been a lot of podcasting today.
Yeah.
Been questionable decisions on the leadership side, you know. So I it's hard to say what kind of impact this is going to have on it. I think, you know, winning will solve a lot of problems. If this team's not winning and then, you know, decisions have to be made at the top, we just don't know what direction people are going to go. So I think Clay Helton can help himself by just winning a whole bunch of games, and then you don't care really what the decisions are made above you at that point. But if he doesn't and someone wants to make a change at some point down the road, whenever it is, I don't know if you have people in play. We just don't know at this point who's going to make those decisions and if they're going to be good ones, because there have been a lot of poor decisions, I guess you could say, Dan, from upper the leadership at USC over the last several years.
Yeah, and I don't think you can look for top-down leadership in terms of, you know, that it's going to come. A lot of people personalize it with the president, but you can't ask the president to be, you know, the guy that's, you know, given the direct. I mean, every once in a while, there is a college president like that. And I remember a long time ago, I wanted to be a football coach, and I remember buying Bear Bryant's first book about being a football coach. And I, first thing he said, then he realized, oh, he's talking about being a college coach. The first thing he said is, don't go somewhere where the president isn't going to support you. He said, if you're going to be as good a football coach as you can be, you have to find the right president. And he went, you know, from Kentucky, he went to Texas A&M, and then he knew the new president, the University of Alabama, was a doctor, I think it was Frank Rose, but he had been the president at Transylvania University in Lexington, Kentucky, when Bear was coaching at Kentucky. And Bear really liked him and trusted him, and he was the new president of Alabama. And that's when Bear said, you know, I think this is the right time to go back to Alabama. That president likes me. I like him. We trust each other. Let's make this work. That's the ideal situation. If you have a president that, you know, trusts you and likes you, and it all works together. But I think it has to come from both ends of that, combination with the president and the athletic department and the head coach. And I'm not sure we've seen enough of that from either direction. But I still don't think it works as much as if it's the president driving it. I think it's got to be the athletic department has to be really, really strong in their own mind. What exactly do we want here? And I don't know that we've seen that. And I think the Coliseum renovation is a good example of, you know, of maybe not being focused enough on what is the best thing for everybody involved with the program. And USC needs to figure it out. I think when USC has the right coach, obviously, if you look at their history, they are very, very good. I mean, and that's always the opportunity. If the program is, and at USC, the really good coach can win no matter who's the president and no matter who's the athletic director. That's one of the the great things about you. There are some programs like that. USC is one of them. But if you get everybody working together and they're all working smart and they're working hard and they're unafraid, you can be pretty good.
All right, I've got one last one. Jason in Longhorn Country. I think he sent this a little bit before, but he said, Oregon State just won the national championship in baseball, but this seems to only confirm how rigged the system is against the Pac-12. The Pac-12 only fielded four teams in the regionals, which is tied for the lowest amount of teams fielded by a Power Five conference. Who were they tied with? A notoriously awful baseball conference, the Big Ten. Do you know the last time the Big Ten won a national championship in baseball? Ohio State in 1966. Do you know the last time the Big Ten was in the finals in baseball? Ohio State in 1966. By comparison, the Pac-12 has had five champions and two runners-up in the last 13 years. That means the Pac-12, a Pac-12 team has competed in the finals seven of the last 13 years. And after that, and after all of that, they are tied with the Big Ten with only four teams in this year's field of 64. Are you kidding me? This is just absolutely ludicrous. It's almost comical to think about the unfounded bias against the Pac-12 in the sport. Anyways, end of rant. Thanks for all that you and the team do in the coverage of SC. Fight on, Jason in Longhorn Country.
Yeah, Jason couldn't be more correct. I mean, it's enough to drive you crazy. And the same thing happens in softball. They are scared to death of the Pac-12, and they're going to see them in ways in which they have to play one another or have to travel. And they're so obviously SEC oriented and dominated that they do make they make life difficult for the Pac-12. And obviously, Oregon State is one of the unbelievable stories. I mean, how many baseball players are in Oregon to begin with? You're fighting the weather, you're fighting the geography. You've got to emerge from a Pac-12 that's pretty good, and you're coming out a little Corvallis. I mean, they do such a marvelous job there. That's as good a story, as much as maybe we're not always upbeat on Oregon State as a member of the Pac-12. What they do in baseball is so good, and such a joy to watch and how they do it. For years, you look at what the committees do in both baseball and softball against the Pac-12, and you just shake your head and said, this is horrible. How do these people, live with themselves? They're not even trying to be fair. They get upset if the number 11 team in the Pac-12 or the SEC doesn't make it. It's like, how is that possible? Oh, my gosh, what's going on? But they don't have any trouble cutting the Pac-12 off at four. Let's face it, the Pac-12 has the best tradition in the history of college baseball. And obviously USC, even now, as far removed as they are, still has the number one, historical program in college baseball. And it doesn't seem to matter because there are other people working a lot harder to get all their teams in. I mean, if you watch ESPN, either baseball or softball, I mean, when was the last time a Pac-12 game was on any of those, weekend, Saturday, Sunday? Never. You might see Texas A&M on there 15 times in one season. You're not going to see Oregon State on there. And some of that's the Pac-12's own fault because they didn't make any kind of agreement with ESPN, and they don't, they wanted to keep their TV package separate and all that. But, Jason, I don't disagree with you. And it would be tough to be a Trojan in Longhorn Country knowing how they look at things. You couldn't be more correct.
All right. Well, thanks for that one, and thanks for all the questions that everybody sent in. It's about an hour, not too bad. Dan, we'll see you out there on Friday for USC's next summer workout. And then next week, we'll be in Hollywood and Highland for a very long day at Pac-12 Media Day.
Yeah, because they're getting an 8 o'clock start for me, that means leaving Orange County about 6, and they're going strong until 6 at night. Whereas the SEC has expanded to 4 days, which would drive me crazy too. If you're in Hoover, Alabama, or wherever for 4 days in the middle of the summer, that's not my idea of a good time either. But you know, I'd rather do it in one day. But boy, that's going to be a big, long, hard day in Hollywood for those of us who are going to be there. But it's fun, and you get immersed in it. I mean, it's just like a flood of faces and names, and you do get a chance to, you know, get to talk to the coaches, get to talk to the players. You get a sense of who they are. You know, the Bryce Love and what kind of a, you know, quality kid he is. And just, you know, there's so many of those kids and a lot of these quarterbacks in the Pac-12. And that'll be cool. And you do get, you know, really, really good opportunities to, you know, to talk to them. And you actually get a chance to have lunch with Larry Scott. So, hey, can't beat that. We're hoping, I think, if the sun is out like it's been, that they get a few more umbrellas to protect the tables. I don't know, Ryan. We were trying to always find out, you know, where is the shade going to be when you try to sit down, you know, for lunch? Because they're like half of the tables are not protected, and, you know, it gets really hot on the top of that, on the Hollywood Hotel or whatever it is. Lowe's Hollywood. Good opportunities to talk to people you like to talk to.
It's going
to
be tougher now because it was split up 2 days, and now you're gonna have everybody getting lunch around the same time. I mean, I don't know. It's gonna be.
Ooh, that's a good point. A lot more people eating lunch at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't know why they did that, but whatever.
Well, I think one of the reasons was the LA people didn't all come when it was USC Day. They did, and then they didn't come back for UCLA Day, I think. I think that was part of it, that people were picking and choosing. And we were talking today, I think the hotel rate is $259 a night. And I'm sure there are a lot of newspapers that look at that, you know, around the Pac-12 and say, man, that's a lot. I know, you know, hotel rates have gone up way more than everything except college tuition, I think. That just seems like a lot for some of the papers, you know, that are coming in to, you know, cover Pac-12 Media Day, that they'd probably rather not spend, you know, 2 or 3 nights in Hollywood at those kind of rates. I mean, those are the good rates.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I'd rather have it someplace else that's a little bit easier. It's just really hard to get there. No matter where you're from, it's going to take, there's traffic is terrible and it's expensive.
Yeah, I've suggested that USC host it. I mean, they've got all kinds of conference centers and, you know, easy parking and kind of in the middle of everything. I don't know why USC, I mean, UCLA in effect hosted it that one year at the Rose Bowl, but I don't think that would have been a bad idea for USC to host it. But, you know, they're so afraid in the Pac-12 of USC looking like they're getting any sort of a favoritism or having any sort of control. But I think, you know, if you're going to have it in L.A. every year, I think USC would be a perfect place to host it.
Yeah.
But.
All right. Well, that's Dan Weber. I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Peristyle podcast. We'll be back. Make sure you check out the site. We got lots of stuff going up, lots of stuff going on, tons of coverage of this Trojan football team. So check it out. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.